Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to a very special 365th episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is not only a terrific actress, but also a cinema giant, a goddess of the silver screen, and the last major female star from Hollywood's golden age who is still with us. Indeed, back in 1999, when the American Film Institute conducted an industry-wide survey to determine Hollywood's 25 greatest female screen legends, limiting eligibility to people whose career began in or before 1950, this Italian-born actress earned a spot on the list alongside the likes of Katharine Hepburn, Betty Davis, Audrey Hepburn, Ingrid Bergman, Greta Garbo, Marilyn Monroe, Elizabeth Taylor, and Judy Garland. And today is the list's sole survivor. Over the course of a career that began some 70 years ago, she made her name in Italian-language films shot in Italy, in English-language films shot in Europe, and in Hollywood, where she became, in the words of the New York Times, quote, a symbol of Italy to generations of moviegoers, close quote, and widely regarded as one of the most beautiful and glamorous women in the world. A New York Times review of an early film in which she appeared read, quote, our advice to all non-Italian speakers who go to see this picture is forget the subtitles, forget the story, they're unimportant. Just watch the dame, close quote. Another volunteered, quote, Miss Loren is a monument to her sex, and the mere opportunity to observe her is a privilege not to be dismissed, close quote. A lot of people apparently agreed, because according to the Motion Picture Herald survey of film exhibitors, she was one of the 10 biggest box office attractions stateside in 1960, 1961, and 1962, topping the list in 1960. And in 1962, after leaving Hollywood to return to Italy and star in the Italian-language movie Two Women, she became, for that film, the first person ever to win an Oscar for a performance in a language other than English, something only four other people, male or female, have done over the ensuing 60 years. Ever since then, she has been regarded as not just a great beauty, but also one of our greatest actresses, racking up strong notices and nominations for numerous other films across the decades. Her illustrious career has been recognized with lifetime achievement accolades, like an honorary Oscar at the Academy Awards ceremony in 1991, for, quote, a career rich with memorable performances that has added permanent luster to our art form, close quote, and the Cecil B. DeMille Award at the Golden Globe ceremony in 1995. But she is not done yet. This year, she returned to the screen, 11 years since her most recent feature film role and 16 years since the most recent film in which she starred, as the lead of The Life Ahead, an Italian language drama directed by Eduardo Ponti, the second of her two children with the late great Italian producer Carlo Ponti, playing a Holocaust survivor and former prostitute who strikes up an unlikely friendship with a young Senegalese boy entrusted to her care. The film, which is being streamed around the world by Netflix, has been very warmly received by critics, clocking in at 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it has brought its star some of the most glowing reviews of her career as well. Case in point, the New York Times wrote, quote, at 86, a movie star since her teenage years, she has nothing left to prove, but she still has everything that has made her the reigning icon of Italian cinema for so long. She is as majestic as ever, but also essentially and passionately populist, a screen goddess whose domain has always been the world of mere mortals, close quote. All of this, of course, is referring to Sophia Loren. Over the course of our conversation, me from Los Angeles and she from her home in Geneva, we discussed her difficult early years as an illegitimate child born in a Roman charity ward and raised by her mother and grandmother, the most important relationships of her life, including those with the aforementioned Carlo Ponti, her husband, father figure, and career architect, as well as the director Vittorio De Sica and co-stars Marcello Mastroianni and Cary Grant, the films for which she is best known and of which she is most proud, including The Life Ahead, and what it was like being directed in that film by her son, plus much more. But first, I was joined for our opening segment by the son in question, Eduardo Ponti, a talented filmmaker in his own right who has made several well-regarded features and shorts prior to The Life Ahead, including the 2002 feature Between Strangers and the 2014 short Human Voice, which also starred his beloved mother.
Eduardo, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Great to have you. Congratulations on the movie.
Thank you.
Before we dive into the movie, I want to just kind of talk about the fact that you have had a pretty interesting life. I've gone back and done my homework, and from literally the minute you were born, you yourself were international news. I'm reading people knew your weight, the fact that you were a C-section. I mean, it's been an interesting ride, I would think, right?
No, can I tell you something, Scott? My brother was international news. I was national news.
Second is less dramatic.
Because it was a big deal. You know, my mother had miscarried more than once, unfortunately. And when my brother was born, it was a very big deal. When I was born, it wasn't breaking news anymore. It was just news. Well, she did it twice.
Well, so talk about, I know this is probably a question you get all the time, but when did you first realize that your mother was not like everyone else's mother?
Well, you know, for me to answer that question, I would have to have a parallel existence where my mother was like everybody else, so I could compare. So it is almost impossible for me to answer in a way. But what I can tell you is that both my parents made their utmost efforts to raise us in a way that was as grounded as possible. You know, they never invited Hollywood into our lives. You know, there are certain people whose identities are so inextricably connected to Hollywood that they are defined by it. My parents have never been defined by their success, essentially, right? The approval of others. They've been defined by their craft. They've been defined by the stories they tell. In the case of my mother, the character she inhabits. But really, she's been also, even more importantly, defined by what she wanted most, coming back to your very first question, which is having children and being a mother. And so I was raised by those, you know, that kind of parenting.
Everyone knows everything about your mother. A lot of people know something about your father, but I want to just ask you, if there's one thing they know, it's that there was this unusual age gap, 22 years almost between them. And everyone says, you know, how does that work? And what does that mean? And all of that. You are one of the small handful of people who are an expert who can answer that question. And obviously, when I speak with your mother, I'm going to ask her why she was drawn to your father. But I wonder, from your point of view, why did that work? And it worked for a very long time.
Why does love happen? Why does love work? It's chemistry. Mm-hmm. It's finding a person who is not only a person that you are obviously attracted to for emotional reasons, but also somebody who's a partner in your life, somebody that you can build something with, you know? And together they built a beautiful life. They had common, you know, interests and professional interests and life interests, you know? And the most important thing, I think, what makes a marriage successful is if you're lucky enough, because you have no idea until a few years into the marriage if you did the right thing. Let's face it, we all are thinking that, you know, pre-I do, we know exactly. No, it's post-I do that we really know whether we did the right thing. And what's really important is that you can grow together. And the secret of my parents is, in my opinion, my mother will say maybe completely a different thing, is that they grew together. Their interests grew together. And that's what kept their friendship, their relationship, their love alive.
So you have these two creative film industry parents, and I wondered, do they say to their two sons as they're growing up, do they encourage or discourage them from following in their footsteps into this business, which has, you know, it's a tricky business?
They say nothing. Because they're smart, and because they understand that the way to truly get into the business is to forge your own path into the business. The path is what makes you unique into the business. The path is how you express your personality, your sensibility, and how you can convince others that your sensibility is worth investing some money in to make a movie. And nobody can create that path for you. The path has to be created by the force of your own conviction into what you feel. And so they were smart enough to, respect our passions, but never find a way to make that road easier for us, or harder for us for that matter, sure. But let it kind of
sure.
be.
So Carlo Ponti, a great producer, Sophia Loren, a great actress, and then son number two, Eduardo, ends up going to USC to study directing. Did that surprise them? Did it surprise you? What set you on that path?
I remember my brother, who's a orchestra conductor, but his main mastery is in piano. And I remember him playing piano in our living room in Paris. And I would sit next to him on the floor, and I would create scenes with my Legos to the score of his piano playing. I was four, you know, he was eight, I was four. So telling stories, you know, sometimes I would even go in my room and I would change the lighting scheme because I found a certain lighting scheme a little bit more attractive to the atmosphere of the room. You are who you are. You can either deny it because, your parents did that. So God forbid I follow in my parents' footsteps, or you cannot deny it. You completely embrace it because you can't help it. And then you do this job as well.
And so was going to USC at that time, I guess your family was living in the United States?
No, never really. They were mostly in Europe. Yeah.
In Europe. And people kind of so closely associate your family with Italy, but actually since the time you were born, even it's primarily been where I'm talking to you now, right? Geneva,
in this home.
Yeah. And so as you left film school and went out into the world to make movies, you had you could have had, if you had enough feet, you could have had a foot in American cinema, Italian cinema, Swiss cinema. How did you decide where to kind of base yourself and what language to work in and all of that?
You don't decide. You decide where the work is. You decide where the offers are.
Yeah,
you decide
right.
where people, allow you to tell the stories that you want to tell. So my career has been, rather international, in Canada, in some in America, and of course in Italy. I want to be a director that works in all of these, not only countries, but in all these languages. You know, I did two movies in Italian. I did one in English. One of my dreams would be to make a French film because I French culture is one that I was raised in as well. So I very much like this kind of filmmaking, which is also why I just loved working with Netflix, because their very profile is a profile that fits exactly the kind of person that I am.
Yeah. I think they're in every country except North Korea.
Yeah, and I'm sure they are. I'm sure that the North Korean leader has a VPN and is watching The Crown.
That's right. And The Life of Half, of course.
But, I didn't want to say it. Yeah. I was just setting it up for you. I didn't want to say it.
Right. Well, okay. So the first time you directed your mother was in 2002. You made a feature film that she was working with you in. And then again in 2014, a short, which you guys showed. And I was lucky to see, I believe, at the AFI Festival when you both came here. And now, of course, this third time. And I just wonder, what is it like directing Sophia Loren? are you, when you're on the set, is it Mrs. Is it Ms. Loren? Is it mom? Is it Sophia? And then just, you know, does she audition for you? What do you, how does this work?
Maybe when we did our first movie, I auditioned for her. That's certain. Because my mother doesn't right. suffer fools lightly. So, of course, she wasn't going to be directed right. by a fool, even if her son was right. that fool behind the camera. So that was going to, you don't become Sophia Loren by just letting yourself be directed by anybody. First
right,
of all.
Right, so, right.
So that's that. But, you know, what's you know, it's... It's, you know, it's, I mean, imagine you directing your mother, you know, it's, and then that experience going very well, you know, so it's something that is, indescribable. It's something that I think, has enriched my soul so much that, if I was meant to die at 87, it added 10 years to my life. And by that, I mean, there is such a telepathic, deep genetic rapport between us. She so understands exactly what I want from her just by me looking at her or just by me touching her hand. And I so genetically, hormonally, in every part of my body understand when she hits the authentic note. You know, the problem with Sophia Loren is how talented she is. That's the problem. Because other directors settle for the average Sophia Loren. And the average Sophia Loren is already way above average. Yeah. But the average Sophia Loren right. isn't what made Sophia Loren. The average Sophia Loren is right. just a version of Sophia Loren. And with me, when we work together, I always try to present her at the height of her powers, at the way that I would want to see her and the way that I know that she can reach. And in the most authentic version of herself, and that's also why I asked her to perform the movie in Neapolitan, to allow her to truly be all of herself, even with the right vocal tone, because when she speaks English, her voice is slightly higher than when she speaks Italian. And when she speaks Neapolitan, her voice is lower than when she speaks Italian.
Wow.
So the Neapolitan wow. is really Sophia with an F. Not Sophia with a wow. PH. It's the Sophia
yes,
of the
before,
yes. Yeah. It's the Sophia of yeah. the street. It's a Sophia that mm-hmm. suffered war, suffered hunger, had no money. The real person that, by the way, is always there.
Right. Well, and you so you perfectly anticipated my next question, which is that in this film, she is of course playing a woman who is even in this stage of her life. You know, decades and decades after the war, still shaped by, sort of haunted by what happened to her during the war. Now, Sophia Loren did not have the same experience during the war, but she had a pretty bad experience as well. And I wonder if you think that that still shapes the way that she is and if that was something that she could maybe draw upon for this role.
No, when she goes to sleep at night, she goes to bed in her queen-size bed in Geneva, but when she wakes up, the first thing she wakes up as is that girl from Pozzuoli. And that's, by the way, that's her strength. And that comes back to what we talked about in the beginning, where my family never brought glamour into her home. My mother never brought glamour into her heart. That's not who she is. And so she is that girl. And so for her to access these things, they're not even around the corner. They're right there as close as you are to me through the monitor. They're because there were such strong experiences. They're experiences that define you, that brand you. But in the end, anything that brands you makes you who you are. And my mother had the intelligence and the sensitivity and the heart and the soul never to forget that.
Well, in this case, you know, one of the things that is supposedly sort of an unwritten rule of Hollywood is don't work with children or animals. And in this case, you decided to work with a child actor who I think he's playing a 12-year-old, but I think he might be a little older, like 14. And that is Ibrahima Gueye. I hope I'm pronouncing it right.
Yes.
He plays a Senegalese orphan here in this film with whom your mother has this unlikely, her character has this unlikely relationship. And I just wonder what your experience was, not only directing your mother, but directing a child who, I don't even know if he knew who Sophia Loren or you or anyone else on that set was, but maybe that was helpful.
Well, he did know because he had been 5 years in Italy. So when he got the role, God knows all the people in Italy who told him, who informed him who my mother was. I mean, can you believe, you know, from the time that he got the role to the time when he was on the set was maybe a month or a month and a half or 2 months. Imagine those 60 days. You know, are you're right. What? You're doing what? You're starring with who? It's like, you, what?
You're her new leading
and
man.
You're her, right, well, hold right. on. It's good. You know, I mean, so it was, you know, so I'm sure. So, you know, there are, I mean, it's a very complex and layered answer because of course there are a lot of things that one does, but for, you know, first and foremost, what you do is to find a child that has the heart and the soul of the character. And immediately when I met Ibra, I knew that he had that heart and the soul and also that sense of humor. And then knowing my mother, knowing how she is and what a perfectionist she is and what a hard worker she is and how prepared she is on set and how precise she is, I was hoping that this child that I had picked had the same work ethic. And so I just spoke to him about how he studies at school and everything. And from his answers and from how he prepared his audition and from how he conducted himself during the 1 month boot camp that I put him through to prepare for the movie, to give him the tools to be himself, because I'm not here to change him. I'm here to give him tools so that he can express who he is. By all that, I realized that he had that same work ethic. But what I also realized is that the chemistry that was formed between these two people, that was something that you can't create, it's something that is just there, was formed because these two people, just like Madame Rosa and Momo, my mother and Ibra, have backgrounds that they can connect with. My mother was also born as a woman in a working class environment, even less than a working class environment. And he also has a family that struggles and a family that is in a difficult situation, like so many people nowadays. And they connected on that level, a level that even I don't understand because I did not have that background. And so they had a language by themselves, of themselves, that was also separate from me. And that's wonderful. Because I don't have to create it. You set it up. It's like planting a garden. You set up the seeds, you go to bed, and when you wake up in the morning, you hope that some shoot is there. And shoots were there. Shoots were there every day. There. Shoots were there every day.
Totally.
And so, yeah.
Well, so speaking, you know, just to the testament to the fact that they were there, I want to just note this movie has been out on the Netflix service, as we say, around the world for, I guess, about a month now, having previously been, even in this weird year, really seen by and loved by critics in a way that, look, your people have liked a lot of things that you've done, but I feel like this has got to be very gratifying that in your mother's the first leading role in a film she's played in over a decade, really like 16 years for a leading role, 11 years for any role in a feature film, to have the response be that she's on the list of the New York Times best performances of the year, that the film is, being raved about by the New York Times and a lot of other places. I just wonder, you know, it's got to be an exciting thing for you as well. I guess just take me into this very strange time during which we're speaking to have this happening. What's that like for you?
You know, it's, when it happens at 47, you're just grateful. You're just grateful. If it happens at 27, you think you're hot shit. At 47, at 47, you're just grateful. You're just happy because I've been working to get to this level for 20 years. And it certainly was not overnight for me. And to be able to create something that people simply respond to, that people are emotional about, that people are engaged by in a way is just, it's so beautiful and it's so gratifying and it's just so touching. And especially, you know, especially in a year like this, you know, in a year of pandemic where the thing that the virus has robbed us of is human connection. You know, to be able to give people an emotional connection to something, it's never as good as having a person connect with you, because a person connecting with you is much better than any movie, of course. But having a movie to be able to provide that connection, to be able to experience people connecting at that level, and for people to respond to it the way that you say they have responded to it, and it is true, is just so gratifying and so absolutely wonderful.
Well, congratulations, and I will note that you have the best of both ends because you look 27. So
thank you. It's easy for you to say it on a podcast because people don't see that I have not one follicle of hair on my scalp.
That's okay. I think you look very youthful, and I hope I think this will probably add this reception to the movie will probably add another 20 years to whatever lifespan it was going to be before.
Here we go. So, I mean, then it's 115 years.
right. Well, thank you again, and congratulations. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
And now for my conversation with Sophia Loren. And if you hear some chuckles in the background, those belong to Eduardo Ponte, who was kind enough to stick around in case any of my questions or Ms. Loren's answers required translation.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ms. Loren, thank you so much for doing this. It's an honor to have you on the podcast. And I just want to congratulate you on the movie and tell you I'm excited to talk to you about it. But on this podcast, we start at the beginning. And so we always just start by asking where our guest was born and what their parents did for a living. I think everybody in the whole world knows that you are from Italy, but maybe you can tell us a little bit more about where in Italy you grew up and what your parents did.
I am from Naples, and it's a wonderful city, full of colors, full of music, full of songs. I was born near Naples when the war was on, very big, and so we suffered a lot, of course. And when I think about that, I feel very sad, because it means that I had not that family anymore, because my grandmother is not with us anymore, my mother is not with us. So many people have disappeared completely. So when I just think about that house of Pozzuoli, which I still remember very well, everything has gone. Also, my friends at school, you know, it's like life. Life is like this, unfortunately. So I have a kind of nostalgia about this. But at the same time, when I think about my life, going back to Rome, where my father was, and we went with my mother many times in Rome for my father, I start to think there are always sad thoughts, But in the beginning, when I was in Rome and I was growing like a little signorina,
a young woman,
I started to. I always wanted to be an actress. As a matter of fact, even with bombs and everything in Pozzuoli, every time there was a picture, American film, I was there in the, just to see Rita Hayworth and all the things. But so this thought about being an actress started when I was in Rome, because it was very nice just to think about it and to see the beautiful houses, the makeup and the hair, wonderful.
Yeah.
I really was dreaming a lot. And then, of course, I started to see my family with my mother and my father. But everything was a kind of... I never wanted to live that kind of life because it was something very sad for me. I had another character. I wanted to live in the way to work. I wanted to work and have a different kind of family by... not for money, but for a nice pleasure, nice.
I think it's important that people should understand that, you know, not only were you growing up during the war where there was, you know, your family, there was shortage of food and bombing around you and just a lot of a very difficult time. But what maybe was, I think, from what I've read about you, the most difficult thing was that your father was not there. You met him a few times in your life, but he was not a part of your life, not a part of your mother's life. She was this very beautiful woman who could have been an actress.
Sometimes he was part of our lives. It depended if it was good for everybody and for me. He was married. He was married also. He married again, and he had two beautiful sons that I met. Yes.
So this left you and your mother in a difficult position now. And she, I think it's important to say, also, not surprising, a very beautiful woman who could have done, she even had some offers to come to, she had an opportunity to come to Hollywood, right?
Yes, because she looked exactly like Greta Garbo. As a matter of fact, when she was walking outside the house, people were just everybody around her just thinking that she was Greta Garbo. And of course, she had makeup like Greta Garbo, a blonde hair like Greta Garbo. She really looked like her. But she never did a great thing about it, and she never tried to take the opportunity to be able to go really very soon when she was still very young, quite young and beautiful, to America, which she won a contest for the most beautiful girl that looked like Greta Garbo. She in the streets, everybody just finished. They were there. They wanted an autograph. She was wonderful, wonderful, yes.
So I guess maybe because of the fact, I don't know if this is the reason, but because she did not get to realize her full dreams, I guess there was a time when you were first becoming a woman where she said, Sophia, my daughter, you're going to be in the movies and we are going to go from our little town to... I guess Rome, where they were shooting Quo Vadis and other movies were increasingly being made there for Hollywood movies. How did you wind up as an extra in movies before you ever had the name Sophia Loren, before anyone knew who you were? I mean, the idea that you were an extra sounds absurd because everybody knows you're a star, but how did that all start?
But we went to Rome because we were looking for a job because... We had to live our life in a certain way. And I was an extra in Quo Vadis, and my mother too, because we needed the money that came a little money that came every day because of the work we were doing. No. And then just going in the theaters, then I had the opportunity to meet many people from the movies, Italian people, and among them it was a producer called Carlo Ponti. And that's a long story.
Well, I think before we get too into that, I mean, the way you met Carlo Ponti was through something else that I think you were encouraged by your mother to do, and rightly so. There were beauty contests, and you were... becoming a very beautiful young woman.
That was part of my day. One day, the money with an extra, and then tomorrow we go to the because they are doing a beauty contest, and maybe you are going to participate in the contest. We had to have a very strict calendar, because otherwise, mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't stay in Rome for a long time. We had to know what we were doing day by day, because right. then we had to leave for Pozzuoli, because no money, nothing.
Right. So how did, you're at one of these, I guess you were maybe not even going to participate in one of these beauty contests. I think you were 15 or 16, and then you hear from a gentleman who's maybe almost 22 years older. He's one of the judges. His name is Carlo Ponti. How did you first cross paths?
I met him in a place where they were doing a contest without knowing, because I wouldn't go, just, you know. And there was una giuria.
A jury.
And there was a jury where there was Carlo Ponti, and I was sitting at the table with my friends that we were dining there. And I received a little card saying, if you like, you can participate to the contest we are doing, because we are doing a Miss Roma. And I said to my friend, a girl and her boyfriend, I said, what do you think? She said, go, just go, we have fun. Okay, I did go. I did not win. No, but it was okay. I was not at all.
You were not angry that you weren't picked?
No, I was not angry, no. But I did very, very, very nice, because Mr. Ponti took me to the little table by table, just to have a walk, just to know each other. He liked me very much. And then he gave me an address to his bureau, where he was working with De Laurentiis, which was another producer. And we started to speak, so we were, you know, like friends, strange friends, because I was a baby. I was 16 years old, but he knew everything. Yeah. And then a little by little, he was doing many films, and he took me as an extra in his films. So we could, with my mother, eat day by day, because otherwise there was nothing. And so that's how I met my husband. Yeah.
Now, when he first, I guess pretty soon after that first meeting, he asked you to come for us.
I also was an extra for the film that he was making. So every day... Every day yes. we could stay fine in a place where we could eat. Yeah.
Now, I believe he also early on did a screen test with you. And as hard as this may be for anyone to believe, he and subsequently other people suggested that you could be even more beautiful if you did certain things to your face. How is that? It's hard for people to imagine.
Mostly the nose. They did not like my nose, which is still there. It's nice. It's always there.
Yeah. But
finally, I did not touch it. As you can see, I did not touch it. Otherwise.
I'm glad.
No, it's okay. And so I started doing these extras, and I started to meet many people of the movies, and then little by little, you know, my life grew with nice people from the movies, which was my ambiente, come si dice?
Your circle.
My circle of friends, yes.
Yes. So at what point did Sofia Ciccolone becomes Sofia becomes so
Ciccolone.
Ciccolone, excuse me, stupid American. At what point did Sofia Ciccolone become Sofia Lazzaro and then Sofia Loren? How did this happen?
Later on, there was another producer going on to see the people from the movies.
Lombardo.
Lombardo. Lombardo, yes. Lombardo was another producer, and she was doing a picture on the sea. But I told him, I said, well, it's wonderful, the sea. I come from Naples, but I don't swim. I don't know how to swim. But anyway, I learned how to swim. And then he said, but we have, because you're going to make this picture, maybe you people are going to like you. You have to have a name that people, it's for people easy to speak, because she Colone, it's one, no, not possible. So I said, okay, you try. They were working with an actress called, I don't think she was very known in Europe, Marta Toren. She was a Swedish actress. Mm-hmm. Marta Toren. He was working with Marta Toren because at the time she was a great name in Italy. And her name was Marta Toren. So I was Sofia. Ma Sofia come? Cicolone? No, impossibile. Loren. Allora, tu sarai col tuo nome, poi puoi cambiare. You can change. How in Italian? You can change if you want to. Ron, but Marta Toren is Sofia. Sofia invece di Marta. Loren, Sofia Loren. And I said, it's okay. Sofia Loren, anything. For me, everything is
fine. So this was for...
Any name for me is fine. So that's how I started. That's how I started my
that's
career.
Great.
That's my career, not knowing that it was going to be my career. And then I did not know how to swim. I had to learn how to swim. Otherwise, I would really, I don't know, die in the water.
Oh, man. Well, so this was 1953. That was the movie Africa Under the Seas. And I guess just I want to clarify. I know this sounds crazy because I have seen all of your movies. I've read everything about you. But even I am not certain, and I've been having a fight with people, that what is the proper way to pronounce your last name? There are some people that say Loren. There are some people that say Loren. What is the correct answer?
As you like it, just say it. Loren.
Loren, okay.
It all depends where you come from. Sometimes they say Lorraine, French. They say Lorraine, Sophia Lorraine. It all depends where you come from.
Okay. So that was in 1953. So was your first, really, I think, major part in Aida. But then I think the real turning...
You know who was singing in Aida? Renata Tebaldi.
Okay.
Do you know lyrical music? Renata Tebaldi was the best singer for operas. And I was in a little room every day, 24 hours, if I could, every day, just to learn the opera. Aida. Aida. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. And they took me from Aida. And that was my first really walk into the... It's too much to say fame.
Yeah.
To but have a little money and to go to eat and to stay with my mother happily and to have a kind of calm inside of yourself. That's all.
Sure. And I think that... So this was all... happening in a very short period of time. You change your name, you become a known person with Aida, and then maybe the most important thing, you meet a actor / director, Vittorio De Sica, and I wonder if you can just explain how there wasn't even an audition, there wasn't a screen test. How did you wind up working with him in The Gold of Naples, which is really the one that put you on the map for a lot of people?
Because I went very often in the theaters that
Cinecittà.
In the theater that Carlo Ponti and De Laurentiis had to make films in Rome, and De Sica was there because he was talking with my husband about another film that he had to do. By the way...
Not yet your husband.
No, my fiancé. But he was doing a film, and he was working on that, really working on that film, because it was taken from a great play of Edoardo De Filippo, that was a well-known author, and it was called The Gold of Naples. So just to think about it, I could cry. I'm so moved. And so he saw me in the theater that where I was, the Carlos theaters, and he said to Carlo, he said, why don't we take this girl? I mean, I would like to know her. Just talk to her in the office. Is she from Naples? He said, yes, she's from Naples, of course. Okay. I will talk to her. So this was my first encounter with a great man that in the beginning, they taught me just the beginning of how to say something, how to cope with the lines. And of course, and this Vittorio De Sica, he came from Naples. So we went to do the test, and the test was wonderful. We spoke in Neapolitan, and there I was already to do a very nice role in the film The Gold of Naples. Mm-hmm. He taught me what to do. Anything that I was touching, I was wrong, because I didn't know anything about it. So... And the first scene that we had, I was walking in the streets with the pizza and the things and singing and wanting, and it was really wonderful. And when they saw the rushes, they said, well, there she is. And everybody was happy because, you know, was very young. I mean, 16. So you can imagine, 16, singing, dancing, and knowing sometimes how to act.
Yeah.
but for us, when you are in Naples, to act means life. You just talk like you talk in life. So it was easy for me, and it was easy for Vittorio De Sica to teach me the lines that I had to say, because I knew it was my house. It was my house.
Yes. And so,
my life is longer.
Well, the thing with
I'm very young, but it's long.
Well, that was one of two very long relationships that began that same year in 1954, I believe, because you would do something like a dozen plus movies with De Sica, but you also did, I believe, 14 movies with Marcello Mastroianni, who you acted with for the first time in a movie called Too Bad, She's Bad. How did you wind up together for the first time?
Because since The Gold of Naples, I started to work every day for a different film. And mm-hmm. there was another director called Blasetti. And it's with him that I started to make this series of films in Italy, Too Bad, She's Bad, and other things. You know, it was really, really wonderful. Yeah. I met him, and we came together, and the public liked us very much. And we did mm-hmm. many films together, one after the other. And yes. since then, more or less, we never stopped, really. The really wonderful for me to live the life I really always wanted. Yes.
Well, I'm going to ask you in a moment about a few of those films that you did with him. But I guess to begin with, though, you became an internationally known person, I think, maybe for the first time when The Gold of Naples screens at Cannes in 1955. You were apparently the most photographed person at the festival. Everybody was wondering who this beautiful and talented young woman is. And then within a year of that, Paramount signed you to a 5-movie contract. And I think a lot of those movies were going to be in Europe, and we'll talk about that. But I think, you know, they still were going to welcome you into the studio family. And so what do you remember of how exciting was it to sign with Paramount and then also to go to Hollywood for, I believe, the first time in April of 1957?
Well, I was very happy, but at the same time, I was scared to death because In America means when you are there, you have to speak English, you have to act in English. And I always said, yes, but no, I mean, it was impossible because I started to speak really the language a little bit after one film or two films because it was very, very difficult.
Well, I actually can follow that up by saying when you arrived in America for the, I believe, right at the beginning in April of 57, Paramount decided to have a dinner to welcome you to the family. This is at Romanoff's, and a lot of people were there, including a lady by the name of Jane Mansfield. And I wonder, you know, this, of course, resulted in the most famous side-eye photo ever.
I receive every day these pictures to sign. Yes.
So how did that moment happen?
No, because she came last in the ceremony. She came the last person, and she was she had a very little décolleté, and she sat at my table. So I was really shocked because I never saw a décolleté like this in my life, and so I just. I was just looking, making her think that everything was fine. Because what could I do? Nothing I could do.
And they were a little worried for her.
They were there, Cary Grant. They were there. The whole cinema in America.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a little bit. I was a little bit shy for her. But it seemed at that time that you could have done something like that in America, in Hollywood. But I don't know. I come from Pozzuoli, Naples. Can you imagine? No, impossible. Yeah.
So you then began these a number of these movies that were in English but shot in Europe. Boy on a Dolphin is in Greece. The Pride and the Passion is in Spain. It started in Naples with Clark Gable was in Italy. But I think the thing that you've been asked a lot about, and it certainly was a major dilemma, I think, in your life at that moment, was you were not yet married to Carlo Ponti because it was not yet possible to be. And here you are working first on The Pride and the Passion with Cary Grant, who one of the most desirable, handsome men in the world, right? Now, he was even more advanced in age than Carlo Ponti was. I think he was about 30 years older than you, but you two became...
No, not 30, very, very, very close.
Yeah. I think you became close, and now you had to decide what to do. And I wonder, and I think that your decision then impacted the next movie you had to do with Cary Grant, which was Houseboat. So just take us back, if you can, for a moment to that turning point in your life, because you had a big decision to make.
Scott, bear in mind, I'm right next to her. So let's, you know, her answer will be tempered by my presence.
But, you know, I am Italian, and mostly I am Neapolitan. I mean, the presence of a man like Cary Grant, it's wonderful because he was really very handsome. And he was a nice person, and he taught me also nice English. But for what concerns the life, the private life, it's something else that I said to myself, I should not look at, because otherwise things are going to be very difficult. So I had my chance to have a wonderful person in Italy called Carlo, and I was going to stick with him because that's what I wanted, really, and not really to have my life all over the world, and I didn't want to be mixed up with so many things. No. He taught me the lines in English, everything. But nicely, yes. Friendly.
Yes.
That's the temperate part, Scott. That's because I'm
there
here.
There we go. Yeah, right. It's So the thing that made this extra interesting is that you had the kind of beginning of the relationship with Cary Grant during The Pride and the Passion, which is 1957. Then you get married by proxy to Carlo Ponti, and then you have to go and finish Houseboat in 1958. Now, Houseboat is a movie that a lot of people know and love, but they might not know that there was all of this drama behind the scenes.
Well, it's better, so we are calm and tranquil. It's much better. I mean, why mix up things that have nothing to do with the story of a houseboat? Why?
That's true. Okay, so now I think were you frustrated by the opportunities that you were being given in America? Did you feel that, you know, maybe the way that I can advance myself as an actress and not sort of be, some people see me as a sex symbol or a sex pot, but I'm an actress. And the way to show that is to go back to Italy. Was that the reason you went back and did the movie Two Women?
No. In America, they thought about sex, but there was nothing that concerned me really, even though I was very young and quite beautiful and this and that. But if you don't treat your life in a way that is very, very tranquil, very, you know what to do with your life. You don't mix up with other things. Otherwise, you get so crazy that you don't know anything about yourself and what you give to your own family, also to your mother. It's impossible. So, I mean, I knew that Carlo was going to be, if it was possible, somebody beside me all the time. So that's what I was always looking, and I always had in my mind, because you cannot go with your mind here, there. Then you're even crazy.
But I guess what was it that made you decide after these first Hollywood movies, I'm gonna make a movie now again in Italy, my first movie back in Italy. It's gonna be in Italian, and it's gonna be Two Women. You know, that you didn't have to go back and do another film in Italy or in Italian. Why was that a movie that you did?
Because I wanted to be an actress, and that would give me the feeling of going on a good path and to do really a master of my career already being so young. And I was right. I left everything and I went back to Italy because I wanted to do this film. Because I wanted to do badly this film, because I knew the story, I loved the story. Carlo was with me, and De Sica, De Sica, De Sica, the name of De Sica said, no, I'm going. De Sica is there, I am going.
But I think we should remind people, this started out with the director was going to be George Cukor, and the star, the woman playing the mother, was going to be Anna Magnani. How did it wind up with De Sica and Loren instead?
I have no idea, because it's a question of the production. I have no idea at all. No idea at all. I knew that the film was given to Anna Magnani because the director, Vittorio De Sica, wanted to have Anna Magnani, because she was also the age of the leader. So he was there, and when she asked who was going to be the daughter, De Sica said, well, there is a very young girl that we like very much, and also Carlo Ponti likes, and it's Sophia Loren. Says, oh, okay. And so she said, well, I have to think about it. And so she decided not to do it. And when she decided not to do it, De Sica said, what are we going to do? Because the leader of the, she's 24, 25, Sophia is very young. So they said, well, we are going to do something with makeup and things. And of course, the daughter is going to be younger. So the daughter was about 14, 15, and so Sophia is going to be the mother. Let's try that. So it's okay. in Italy they do these kind of things because everything thinks that they are crazy. But no, I won the Oscar for it.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess, you know, if there's one scene that really kind of captures the magnificence of that performance, you know which one I'm going to bring up. This is after the terrible rape.
Of course. And you know,
with
the stone. Did that. I always remember because I was very worried because of it was a difficult scene. A difficult scene after the car, the stone, and everything was very difficult. So I said, well, no, we'll do it. We'll do it. We'll do it once. We did it once. And after we had done it, De Sica, he was in a little place near the herbs because he had to shoot this way, like on the street. And I said to myself, Madonna, he's going away. Maybe he didn't like the scene. What am I going to do? I was crying already. And he said, No. What? No. Let's do it again. Why? We have the time. There's the sun. Everything is okay. No. I said, why? Because you will never do it as well as you did.
Wow.
We do it once and it's finished. I didn't sleep all night thinking we could have done it again tomorrow. Always. Incredible.
Wow.
Incredible, yes.
Well, so I wonder if you can tell me about somebody who is sort of maybe sadly a little bit forgotten, but somebody named Joseph E. Levine, who I think really was helpful in bringing this movie to America and raising its profile to help. I mean, your performance was definitely Oscar worthy, but there had never been a movie not in the English language that had won an acting Oscar. So it needed somebody to help raise the profile. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about Joseph E. Levine.
I don't know, because I really don't know him, because he was always with my husband, but he adored the Italian movies. I know that he did a great job with the publicity of La Ciociara. I know that he loved the film very much, and he was very, very close to us to be able to have this opportunity just to be in the be embraced by the American people that gave the prize. I don't know. Yeah.
So after winning the Oscar, you're one of the biggest box office stars in the world. You are doing some English language movies that are very widely seen, very liked. With Anthony Mann, the director, there's El Cid and The Fall of the Roman Empire. With Paul Newman, Lady L. With Gregory Peck, Arabesque. This is all within a very short period of time. But at the same time, you were having a truly international career, unlike anybody had had before, where you're also going back and doing films in Italian. And that's why I want to mention that, again, in this same period, a few of these that people most loved and remembered you and Mastroianni together in, starting with Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow in 1963. This is a three-part anthology series for our listeners to remind them. And in the third part, it is the most famous part because you and he, you're playing a high-end prostitute. He is playing a client, and there is this incredible striptease. And I just wonder, did you know?
Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow.
Yes. And so in the moment, did you know that you had something that was a really special scene? Was it comfortable for you to do, or was it uncomfortable? Just take us back to making that scene.
But I don't know, because it was the scene of the film. But the funniest thing was the direction of Vittorio De Sica, because Vittorio De Sica, instead of sitting down and just look at Marcello doing it, maybe he was doing it wrong for him, for De Sica. Then he said, just wait a moment, I will do it for you, and you will see what to do. So he did. He did the scene that Marcello does in the film. That Marcello does it the way that he did it when he was rehearsing with him. You can imagine what he did. He was wonderful, De Sica. Wonderful. Incredible. Because he had the right time. He was an artist, De Sica. And yeah. He was funny. And he enjoyed so much working. He enjoyed so much acting. He was incredible. Really incredible. And Marcello did it, yes. Marcello did it wonderfully, repeating what he was doing before. And it was a great success, that film. Very, really wonderful picture and fun to do, a lot.
So that movie wins the foreign language film Oscar, and everybody wants to see more of you and Mastroianni together again. And you, I believe, were the one who suggested Marriage Italian Style for a year later, right?
Yes. From a Neapolitan comedy, yes, a Neapolitan comedy, very important comedy that Edoardo De Filippo did, yes, absolutely.
And so that was your second Oscar nomination. And then years later, this was now 13 years after that, you and Mastroianni again, but not with De Sica this time, in A Special Day, which a lot of people think is one of your best performances. And in fact, I want to read the New York Times review called it, quote, movie acting at its best, close quote. This is you and he are neighbors who meet on a day when Hitler is in visiting Mussolini. It's 1938. And this is a woman, unlike a lot of them that you were being asked to play, who was a little bit older, not glamorous. And yet you have said that, quote, I feel much closer to Antonietta than any role I played in films. Maybe that changed later on, but why was that a special role to you?
If you go on, I'm going to cry.
Really?
Yeah, I'm very, very moved because, you know, even there, the director, I don't think he wanted me for the role. And so Carlo was there with me, and he was listening, and then he said, well, then we don't do the film. You know, if something is so strong, because why? Why? I was a nice actress. I was the role. I could have done a very good role in the film. Why? It's a capriccio?
Is it a whim?
What?
A whim.
It's a whim. So, I mean, he knew very well that if he didn't take me, the film was not going to be done. So he did. And he said, thank you, Sophia, because you were wonderful in the role. What wonderful.
Wow. Wow. So you...
Of course, I embraced him. I embraced him. Yeah. He was a nice guy and a wonderful director. That's why I wanted to work with him.
Yes.
Great director. And of course, with Marcello, let's not talk about it.
So. Yes. Well, so I just want to mention a few of the other directors that you've worked with, and then we will talk about this latest great performance. But just if you can talk about, I mean, you were in Charlie Chaplin's last movie. This was A Countess from Hong Kong, you and Marlon Brando. It wasn't the best reviewed of all of your movies, but it must have been pretty surreal to be making a film with Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. The last one, yeah. Mm-hmm. What a career. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. I mean, I cannot speak about Charlie Chaplin because he was a wonderful person. He was a great artist. It's not up to me to say. And we had a wonderful time with him. He was funny. He was... really great. He was very charming, very... He had always on the set his wife, and I cannot forget him. I cannot forget him to really... I mean, I had a wonderful time with him.
Yes. Marlon Brando was maybe a little less charming, right?
I was okay. He liked very much the gelato, ice cream. But when he had to act, he was a wonderful. I mean, without kidding, he was a wonderful actor and a wonderful face and a wonderful person. Wonderful. A little hard, but at the end, when you know if he has something that is not, then you like him a lot completely because right. because his acting was absolutely, even in comedies, was wonderful. Yeah.
Yes. Many years after that, in 1994, which was 30 years exactly after, 29 years after.
Too many years. You get mixed up. Too many years. Too many years. You get mixed up here and there.
Well, this is important to say, though, because this is now, it's 1994. That is 31 years after Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. And Robert Altman gets you and Marcello back together for one last movie together, Preta Porter. And you are asked, or I think it may have even been your idea, to do a kind of a joke playing on the striptease from Yesterday.
His idea.
It was Robert Altman.
Marcello liked it very much because he was enjoying it so much to be so old and to do that scene that was a parody of the film that we had done together. And he loved very much the idea. Yes, it was also Marcello's mind with the director. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And we should just remind people that the joke here was that unlike in Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, where he was slobbering over you, now he's snoring during the striptease.
Yeah.
Okay, so second to last movie I want to talk about is Nine, because this was, until The Life Ahead, the last time we saw you in a feature film. It's with a director who I know you are very fond of, Rob Marshall, and it's one of the greatest casts ever assembled. You are playing the mother of Daniel Day-Lewis. This is a sort of a play on the Fellini movie 8 and a Half. And I just wonder what that experience was like for you there.
No, for me, it was a wonderful experience to work with this director. I liked him very much. And, you know, it's like every film you do. You try to make the best you can. I don't know what the destiny of this film has been later on when it came out. This I don't know. But it was, for me, a great, great moment when I was working with Daniel Day-Lewis. I think he's such a great actor. I don't know why he stopped working.
I know, it's crazy, right? Give him a call. Tell him no retirement. It's not a good thing to retire.
I'm not so close to him as to call him. I don't know.
So another thing, though, that film makes me wonder. So that movie, Nine, is based on or inspired by 8 and a Half, which is Fellini, who you presented an honorary Oscar to in 1993, 2 years after you got one. And yet you and Fellini never worked together. What's that about?
Maybe he didn't like me.
No. I heard that there was something at the end of his life where he was planning to do something with you.
I don't know. Maybe it was too late because yeah. he's not yeah. with us anymore. No, I don't know. But I went to see him always when he was working with Marcello was there. So I wanted to see Marcello working with Fellini because I felt a kind of, I wanted to see what was happening between yeah. them both. Yes.
Wow. But, so you were there for 8 and a Half?
No, I was not there, but I went there not very often, but 2 or 3 times. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So why was it 11 years until we got to see you in a feature film again, and 16 years since you were the lead of one? Now we finally, thank God, we have The Life Ahead. You're so great in it, and I'm going to ask you about all about it. But just these last few years, was it a choice to sort of just wait for another great role to come along, or were you thinking you were retired, or what were the why has it been so long since we got to see you in a movie?
Because suddenly I woke up and I said to myself, yes, I'm going here and there, but my family, I forget about my family. I don't see my family. I don't see the children that they have. I don't see anything of the life that I was trying to build around me. So I stopped because of this. And I was in their houses many, many times, and I was with them all the time, because I wanted to know what I had done with my intimate life.
Yes.
Because when you make a film, you have to do what you have to do, and you cannot think about something else. But children are children, sons are sons, so I stopped. But I didn't know it was getting so long. Just now, coming back here, it was everybody, that's been so long. I said, yeah, my life has been so long. And only now I realized, because I think I needed time for myself and for my life that I was trying to build around me. Otherwise, what do you live for just for working?
Right. No, yes, it's certainly...
Yes, it's possible, but it's better not to. It's better to do anything at the right time, you know.
Absolutely.
So when Eduardo came to me, I was with the children. I was in America, maybe somewhere. And he said, well, I have this book. And he spoke to me about the story that he was... that he wanted to do, and I said, let me read it. When I read it, I said, well, I think that my license is finished. I think I'm going to go back again with my work, because this story is really worth everything that I could think about in my career. And so I said, well, give me the book. I read it. I was enchanted by it, and here I am.
Well, so in a moment I'm going to ask you about working with your son, but first I want to ask you about why this story. You've said that the character you play reminds you of your own mother. I am thinking, watching it, it sort of makes me wonder if there's certain things, though, about your own life that you can tap into. I mean, you also... you were very shaped by growing up during the war. You didn't go through the Holocaust, but you had a very difficult time yourself. And this woman, even all those decades later, is still kind of shaped by, sort of haunted by what she experienced as a young girl. Could you relate to her in that way, or is that just me imagining things?
Well, for me, if you talk about life and if you talk about the war, it's if you have lived through that kind of a life at that time, you will never forget it. So it reminds me of so many things. It reminds me of grandmother, of my mother. And sometimes when I think about it, I can cry. I can cry right away, because it's something that you will never, never forget in your life. So I was very pleased to have the opportunity to do this story, because it's a beautiful story. The role for me, for my age, 85.
We don't have to tell anyone.
I hope you don't write about it. 85, so it's really something that is very close to me. And every day I went to the makeup room. I am really very, very sad that it's finished, that now the film is done, and now it's given to so many people. And it's really a beautiful story, and I had the opportunity to have a wonderful role. And I am very happy for what I decided in my life to do. And And I love my children, and I love Eduardo as a director.
Were you surprised when Eduardo told you as a young, even younger man, that he wanted to become a director? Did that surprise you, or did you realize that was his path?
Sei sorpresa quando ero giovane che ti ho detto che volevo diventare regista?
No, because I already knew since he was born that he was tough. He was somebody that when he thought of something, especially of his dreams, it has to come. It had to come. So I just shut up and I said, it's okay. Yes, we'll do it. You will do it. You are fine. Yes. And he did. He did wonderful things with me. With me, wonderful things. Especially,
well, yes,
especially the...
The human voice.
Eh? The human voice. Especially...
Yeah, Angry Wester.
Yeah, well, don't talk about this one because this is a masterpiece.
Well, so there. This is the third time you guys are working together. In 2002, there was the feature movie Between Strangers. In 2014, there's the short film The Human Voice. But this one is being received like a masterpiece on a different level. And I just wonder, yeah, what is it like for you to be directed by your son? Is that, that's got to be a sort of strange experience?
Why?
Not in a bad way, not in a bad way, in a good way. But I mean, it's different than anything else, right?
It's wonderful because we know each other so well that it's enough a look that makes me unhappy or makes me very, very happy. It's wonderful. It's really something that grows in the family. It's wonderful that I know. He's a man that I know. I know his looks. I know his way of acting. And I know his way of working. It's a joy for me to work with him. You shouldn't tell
Did
him,
it?
Though.
What's that?
You
What's
should
that?
Not tell him.
Okay, so does it also feel sort of like life has come full circle? Because here, you know, the movie that you won your Oscar for 60 years ago was you with a child actor who you are protecting and kind of guiding. This is right in Two Women with Eleanora Brown with the young girl. Here, it's a young boy who you have this very special screen relationship with. And it's obviously it's a different time. It's, you know, a different kind of story. It's great. You have a trans performer in the movie. You have all different kinds. It's a very 21st century movie. But I wonder, you know, at this time in your life to be working with this young man, the Ibrahima, you know, what that's like to have a young co-star and kind of be able to share maybe some of the lessons that you've learned from a very long and successful career.
He was a wonderful guy to work with. He's very keen about acting. He's very keen to listen. He's very keen about doing good things. And he really acted like a grown-up. He was very focused on the role like a grown-up. And it was really... Sometimes, you know, I was asking him, well, would you like to be an actor tomorrow? You are already an actor. He said, no, I'm going to be very good. This is nothing for what I can do. You can imagine a very young boy to speak like this. I think he has nice dreams, good dreams that really are going to be there. And when he grows, I think he wants to be an actor. I think so.
That's great. Well, people are loving the movie, and I think it's great. And I wonder if for our last minute, if I can just ask you the first thing that comes to your mind about a few things, and then we'll end there. But just what age do you feel?
16.
16? Do you prefer being around people your own age or younger?
In the middle.
In the middle. what role do you most wish you had gotten to play that you didn't? Is there a role that got away?
A film that was given to me to do from a great director che si chiamava Luchino Visconti.
Mm-hmm.
It was a role of a nun in a book, in a great book, non mi viene il nome. A great book of an author that is not with us anymore called Manzoni. Mm-hmm. We were ready to start shooting, but one day something went wrong and another director in Italy started the film. Not with the same script, but with his own script. They robbed the story and they did the film, which was a big flop. And I was very happy. I always thought it was going to be the story, the film of my life, because also the director was a wonderful director, was one of the best we had in Italy, Visconti.
Yes. Who, in your opinion, is the most beautiful actress in the movies other than Sophia Loren?
Betty Davis.
Betty?
See?
Really?
Betty Davis. Dramatic films, yes. I loved it.
But in terms of beauty?
Beauty. Who was for
beauty.
You?
Yeah, who was for you? Rita Hayworth. No, Rita Hayworth. Beauty. I didn't understand beauty, yes. Rita Hayworth.
How has COVID affected your life?
Let's not talk about it.
It's too upsetting. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Mamma mia. Non posso. Okay.
Will you star in another movie?
Why not?
Yeah, well, I just want to make sure. I don't make us...
It's like you are afraid to ask. Perché? Why?
No, well, don't make us wait 11 more years.
No. I'm not nervous.
So if you could go back in time and change anything, would you?
No, I'm fine the way I am. I'm fine for the age I have. I've had my life. I'm having my life. It's okay.
Well, thank you. I adore you and your movies, and I can't thank you enough for doing this. I hope it wasn't too painful. And
I like you a lot. Let's do it again.
Awesome. Well, thank you, and thank Eduardo, and enjoy all the acclaim. This is really, I know, a special thing that so many people are loving this movie, and I hope you feel very proud.
Yes, I'm very, very happy. Very happy. Yes.
All right. Well, stay safe, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for tuning into Awards Chatter. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that, and would really appreciate you taking a minute more to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your podcast app, and to leave us a rating as well. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach me via Twitter at twitter.com/ScottFeinberg. And you can follow all of my coverage between episodes at thr.com/TheRace. Until next time, thanks for joining us.